The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. When Jesus had risen early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had driven seven demons. She went and told his companions, who were mourning and weeping. When they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe. After this, he appeared in another form to two of them, walking along on their way to the country. They returned and told the others, but they did not believe them either. But later, as the 11 were at table, he appeared to them and rebuked them for their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they had not believed those who saw him after he had been raised. He said to them, "Go into the whole world and proclaim the gospel to every creature." The gospel of the Lord. It's a challenging gospel passage that we have to celebrate this Saturday in the octave of Easter. You know, we continue our celebration here, our week-long celebration of Easter. We celebrate this great solemnity this morning, and Jesus is, as we continue to mark Jesus's resurrection and the early hours, so to speak, of Jesus's rising from the dead. It's a challenging gospel passage for any number of reasons. One, because the writing here is so unlike Mark and is repetitive in ways that give us pause about whether or not this was actually part of Mark's original conclusion to his gospel. This is nothing, by the way. This is nothing of scandal, by the way. This is part of what we understand to be Mark's canonical gospel. That's all well and good. It's just that we have questions about the ending as to whether or not it was the original author, right, or if this is some kind of pulling together of traditions that happened sometime after the original Gospel of Mark's written. That might sound like a really big deal. It's a big deal, but it's not a really big deal. I mean, we know that it's just not written in the way that Mark writes the rest of the gospel. And, you know, this repetition of Mary Magdalene here at the beginning, she's just been mentioned any number of times in Mark's gospel. So, I mean, part of the speculation is that being written on more of a scroll, the last little part of Mark's gospel was somehow not preserved. And we have this kind of early reflection of the local Christian community to bring it to a conclusion, where otherwise it would end way too abruptly for us to really, I don't know, to stomach it. It needs some kind of conclusion. It's just not a great Markan conclusion, is the thing. It's not in his hand, so to speak. But it gives us an opportunity to see how the events around Jesus' resurrection were themselves received and proclaimed in that early Christian community. When I say that, I mean we're still talking about the very early second century, more than likely, right? This is not like a later edition. This is people who are themselves passing the manuscript around, so to speak, and receiving and making this story, this great occurrence, Jesus' resurrection, they're making it their own in every possible way. So it's good, it's not good, and it's good. It's good and it's not good, right? So that's part of the challenge that we have here. I'd say part of the other part of the challenge is actually the challenge itself. The challenge that Jesus gives here, the challenge of the early Christian community. Right, Jesus appears to them. He says, "Go into the whole world and proclaim the gospel to every creature." And probably a better translation of this would be, "Go and proclaim the gospel to all of creation." This is strange, right? It's strange, challenging the rest. What does it mean to proclaim the gospel to all of creation? And we have kind of echoes of this in St. Paul, and St. Paul's letters are written earlier, if we can conceive of that, where he says that, you know, all of creation is in labor pains, awaiting the revelation of the sons and daughters of God. You know, what does it mean then to proclaim the gospel to all of creation? Well, what is the gospel? The gospel is the good news of Jesus. There's a new king. That's what euangelion means. There's a new king. And there's a new king not simply of the king of the Jews or a lord of all nations, king of every human heart, but there's a king of all creation. It's a new king of all creation. And he is restoring creation everywhere he goes, in and through his faithful followers. And this is our task. When we read the Genesis narratives of the beginning of the world, we're caused to bring in reflection out of that what the Catechism says is a creation of holiness and justice. That this idea that we're in relationship with God, we're brought into relationship with God, and we're made then, by virtue of the fact that we're in right relationship with God, we're made to be in right relationship with each other. This is it, holiness and justice. And then you look at, say, creation, the things of the world, the created things of the world, and we understand that their right use will be ordered to furthering holiness and justice. Furthering God's cause, his purposes, and living out real harmony, real loving community with the entire human race. Is that the way it is today? It doesn't seem to me to be the case. It doesn't seem to be the case that our world is set on holiness and justice. No, I don't really want to offer this critique this morning, but let me just throw it out there. You know, because we're all one against the other, we use people to increase our things. Do you know, it's totally backwards. We love stuff and we have to use people to get there. I mean, this is the story of, I would have to say, most multinational corporations. I mean, this is the way of the world. You say, okay, Father, you know, come on. We know what it is. This is how it is. But is it how it's supposed to be? It's not. And in the resurrection of Jesus, we have a new beginning to creation. We have a new creation. And it's significant. Go back and read the first reading again, right? What are the charges that are being brought against the apostles? They healed a man. They healed a man. It's an act of new creation. God's renewing, restoring all of creation. And guess what? The people around them don't like that. They don't like that because it's not in their control. Right? There's a new power on the scene. And it goes beyond what any of them have. And this is the challenge, right? When we go and preach the gospel to all of creation, when we go and set captives free, when we heal people, when we free people who are oppressed, we know that we're going to get a lot of pushback because it's a new creation, and the power of the new creation goes beyond that of the old. It's not a simple reshuffling of the old, right? There's a new power at work. And what is that power? It is love. The animating force of new creation is love. And we have to give ourselves over to it. I understand there are any number of critiques of what I've just said, that the animating power of new creation is love, and that's the test that we have to be about. There's this kind of, well, you know, love, is that enough? It sounds so airy. You know, well, if it sounds airy, then we're getting it wrong. Because love is our real commitment to the other for the sake of the other. What did you hear? What did you not hear in that? Me or I. Right? Except that I have to give myself to the other for his or her sake. That's a big challenge. And it's not just a big challenge when you start to do it. It's a challenge that increases in demands by the day. Yeah? We have to give ourselves totally to that. We can only give ourselves totally to that project if we receive from God the life of self-gift itself, which is God's own life of love. That's what it is. And then as we live that out, as we live out lives of love, as we commit ourselves more and more to the demands of love, we realize, yeah, this has to go to the next level. This has to go to the next level. I have to be on the lookout for where the demands of love need to be met. Do you know, it's not like, okay, so I say, I'm gonna live that life of love that Father's been blabbering on about for 5 years. You know, like I'm gonna try to live the demands of love. Okay, sit on my couch and see what comes to me. That's not love. That's not love. You don't get to stay in your own space. I mean, this is right. What is the first part? Go into the whole world. Go into the whole world. He didn't say, sit back, wait for the world to come to you, then meet the demands of love for the people who come. No, go into the whole world. Go into the whole world. There's a new creation. We have to renew the face of the earth. And that means that not only do we, our whole heart, our whole life has to be transformed by love, by the love of God and his desire that we bring his love to life in the world, but we have to go out and love. That's evangelization, by the way. Right, we're so close to this word here, the euangelion, the gospel. That's evangelization. I have to love the world back into life. That's what we have to do. We don't get away with walking into the world, saying some words that we've always wanted to say and walking away. We have to love. It's much more difficult. It's much more difficult, but it's much more rewarding. Because Jesus has made us to be part, not just part of his new creation, advanced signs of his new creation, but he's called us to be agents of his new creation. And by trusting and following him, by giving ourselves away in his service and for the sake of love, we will achieve the greatness for which we were made.